We are still working on a solution to me being able to work through the slides at my pace. And I think if you can put the deal on the arrow there, okay, now I should be able to control it from here. I can't go backwards, so if I ask to go backwards, Luke, I'll need you to back up for me. How many of you have those backward cameras on your car? Okay, how long did it take you to get used to using it? Not very long? Okay. I've tried a couple of times, and in daylight, it's wonderful. At night, I can't quite trust that thing. Oh, boy. Isn't it good there's that just prompted in me thinking about the camera of that the Lord is beside us and in front of us and behind us, and we can walk securely in His presence, and I'm grateful for that. We've been looking at Matthew. We looked at the king's coming into the world with his genealogy, and then looking into his authority over all kinds of things, everything from nature to demons to illnesses to water, that he has authority over all of these things. And Matthew is presenting him as the king with the authority to control everything because he is the creator of everything. Today, we want to look a little bit at the king's agenda. And so in that light, there are a few things that will help us to understand what we're going to read. And so let's just take a moment here and do a little bit of an introduction. Challenges that governments face. One of the biggest challenges is money. If you remember in the Napoleonic Wars, one of the differences between the French army and the English army, I know we talked about this a little bit last week, but a different element now. The French army foraged for food. The English paid their soldiers. And so when the French would come through, they would go to all the houses in a wide swath. You imagine an army of several hundred thousand. What kind of territory would be required to be able to gather food to feed everybody? And so they had foraging parties that were constantly going out. And the English won the hearts of the common people because when the French went out, they took the food they wanted. When the English went out, they paid for the food they wanted. Governments that find a way to not abuse the finances of their people have one less reason for the people to rise up and revolt against the government. Now, I'm not saying that Rome had this figured out, just illustrating the problem. Because Rome, they had quite a system set up that was just perfect for corruption. Determining the cost of government, what services are you going to provide? Are you going to pay your military, make them forage? And are you going to use government money to enrich the people who are the influencers around you? And then once you figure out what kind of services you provide, how you're going to float everything, then you have to figure out now how much money is it going to take and how are we going to pay for it? And are we going to make laws that limit what the government can do, or are we going to make laws that allow for the government to do what it wants and the government's representatives to do what they want? Are we going to have any protections against corruption, any protections against graft, or are we going to incorporate that into our system? With Rome, they began taking over the Jewish lands in about 63 BC. They didn't fully subdue them, though, until Herod was made king. But the taxation began at that point. And the region of the Jews being annexed in about 6 BC, when Herod was given that kingship, they established two types of taxes during that period. A toll tax, which would be almost comparable to our income tax, a little bit different. And a ground tax, which was kind of like a property tax. Incidentally, let me take just a quick sidetrack. Have you wondered when the Bible always describes the land of the promise as being a land flowing with milk and honey? And when we would look at it today, especially 40 years ago, if we would look at it 40 years ago, we'd look, it's just desert. The entire thing is desert. Why? What happened to it? You know, partly the Lord had said this is going to happen. He was going to make the land desolate, and then he's going to bring his people back, and he's going to make it again a land flowing with milk and honey. But in the in-between time, there was this ground tax that, if I remember correctly, was the Ottoman Empire put on the land, that you paid an annual tax for every tree on your property. Now, if you have lots of trees, what are you going to do? You're going to chop them down. Yeah, and the land was just denuded. It was, all the trees were taken down, and it caused the climate patterns to change. And the land became a desert. Now we're starting to see over the last 40 years, wonderful things. They have developed irrigation systems in Israel that are now used throughout the world, where the water is able to be applied exactly where it is needed in the amounts that is needed so that things can grow and bloom. And what's happening is the climate has been changing over Israel. The rains are beginning to come again, and the Lord is blessing that land and causing it to bloom again. Now, back to our outline here. Two types of taxes, a toll tax and a ground tax. Then the administrative structure of these taxes. How are you going to collect it? Well, what Rome decided to do was to sell the rights to collect taxes to people of high station in the country, such as senators and high-ranking officials. They would compete in an auction to buy the right to tax the people. And then the contract was, you raise the tax, you pay the government that tax, and whatever else you can raise above that is yours to keep. That's your profit. Those people were called the publicani. In English, we would call them the publicans. The rate was fixed for 5 years at a time, but the people at the bottom end paying the tax, I don't know how much they knew about what the government rate was because they weren't able to resist. So what would happen is the purchasers were allowed to keep whatever was collected above what was owed, and then they would hire out the regular tax collecting job to local guys. And so can you imagine now the local guy coming to you and saying, okay, oh, let's pay up. I remember one treasurer in a church that I served in teased, you know, every once in a while I think we ought to lock the doors and not let anyone else out until we've collected enough offering for this Sunday morning. I don't know that we'd go that far. Well, then there's the other ones who had the collection basket on the end of a pole, and they would leave the basket in front of you if they didn't think you'd put enough in. And then there was from, it was either the cross and the switchblade. I think it was the cross and the switchblade. Remember when David Wilkerson was hosting a Youth for Christ event in a big auditorium, and he had one of the gangs that Nikki Cruz was in be the offering collectors. And they would come up and wiggle that bag in front of you until you paid up. And then the startling thing was when they got to the back after collecting the offering, remember, how many of you have seen it? A long time ago. Remember what happened at that point? All the gang members were saying, look at all this money, let's run. And I think it was Nikki Cruz that said, no, he trusted us to collect the money, we're going to turn the money in. And you could see at that point the change happening in his heart as he began to lean toward trusting in Jesus. But this whole thing about, keep giving, that's not enough. And we understand all the stories about how hated tax collectors are. And it was true in the Bible as well as in other cultures all around the world. Tax collectors have always been the hated ones. Well, these publicani, whoops, can we go back one? It skipped ahead on me. The publicani hired the local guys, and the local guys were called telones. There we go. Okay, and so the telones, they were the ones that were known by everybody. And because of the hatred toward those guys, they were ostracized from their society. They weren't welcome in the synagogues. They weren't kicked out of the synagogues. They weren't excommunicated, but it was pretty clear that they weren't welcome. They weren't welcome in the temple. The temple guards would resist allowing them to come in. And they were considered, along with prostitutes and sinners and Gentiles, at the bottom of the Jewish societal structure. Rarely accepted by other Jews, especially the religious leaders. That's kind of what's so unique about Jesus. When he came to Matthew, Matthew was sitting in his tax collecting booth, and Jesus said, "Come, follow me." And Matthew left the booth and followed him. I've often wondered, did he leave the money there too? Or did he have someone who delivered the taxes he had collected because of his obligation? Oh, by the way, we talked about the publicani were able to keep anything above what was required and keep that as their profit. The telones were allowed to do that as well. And so you had two layers of people that could charge you more than they owed and keep that. And so the telones would be told by the publicani, "This is how much you must pay me." And then the telones would go out and set their rates or set their how much is owed and go collect as much as they could. So Matthew was called out of that life to follow Jesus. He's one of the writers of what are called the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And as we saw a couple of weeks ago, it's possible that this letter, this record of the gospel, was written within 15 to 20 years of the resurrection of Jesus. And Matthew is a lot like John. Remember how John refers to himself in his letters? The disciple whom Jesus loved. He never calls himself by name, but we know it was him. We're very, very confident it was him. Matthew is in a similar way. When he refers to himself, he refers to himself in the third person. He never takes pride when Jesus talked to him. "Jesus told me." It's always, and he told Matthew. He talked to Matthew. Extremely humble. His authorship of the Gospel of Matthew is unquestioned in the early church. All of the earliest manuscripts have his name attached to it, and all of the early church fathers referred to him as the author. The date of writing is before the destruction of the temple, before 70 AD. So in today's section, we're going to read Matthew 10 through 12. Last week, I gave you the outline that was there, but we didn't take time to read it. This time, it's a short outline, and so I want to just go through it really, really quickly, and then we'll open and read. And then I also want to share something else with you from Evangelical Friends Mission. It won't go onto our feed, but I want to share it with you so that you can see what's happening here. Okay, so in the calling of the 12, in the agenda of Jesus, he introduces the 12 right at the very beginning of what we're going to read today, and then he sends them out, and then as they come back, he starts to talk to them, what is the life of a disciple of Jesus going to look like? What are your values? What things do you treasure? All those kinds of things. What is the position of a disciple, and then what are the responsibilities of a disciple? And then as God does, what are the rewards? You know, he always talks, says, here's what I desire for you. Here's what is necessary for your part. And here's what you will receive if you will trust and believe. And so let's open up to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. Jesus summoned his 12 disciples, and he gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Now these are the names of the 12 apostles: the first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out after instructing them, "Do not go in the way of the Gentiles, and do not enter any city of the Samaritans, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is at hand.' Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not acquire gold or silver or copper for your money belts, or a bag for your journey, or even two coats or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worthy of his support. And whatever city or village you enter, inquire who is worthy in it, and stay at his house until you leave that city. And as you enter the house, give it your greeting. If the house is worthy, give it your blessing of peace. But if it is not worthy, take back your blessing of peace. Whoever does not receive you nor heed your words, as you go out of that house or out of that city, shake the dust off your feet. Truly I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves. But beware of men, for they will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues. And you will even be brought before governors and kings for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they hand you over, do not worry about how or what you are to say, for it will be given you in that hour what you are to say. For it is not you who speak, but it is the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father will betray his child to death. And children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. You will be hated by all because of my name. But it is the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. But whenever they persecute you in one city, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not finish going through the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor is a slave above his master. It is enough for the disciple that he become like his teacher and the slave like his master. If they have called the head of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign the members of his household? Therefore, do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed. There is nothing that is hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the darkness, speak in the light. And what you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim upon the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a cent, and yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So do not fear. You are more valuable than sparrows, than many sparrows. Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I will confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be the members of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life will lose it. And he who has lost his life for my sake will find it. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. He who receives a prophet in the name of the prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. Chapter 11. When Jesus had finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, he departed from there to teach and preach in their cities. Now when John, while imprisoned, heard of the works of Christ, he sent word by his disciples. They said to him, "Are you the expected one, or shall we look for someone else?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Go and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, and the lame walk. The lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he who does not take offense at me." As these men were going away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to see? A reed shaken by the wind? But what did you go out to see? A man dressed in soft clothing? Those who wear soft clothing are in kings' palaces. But what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes. I tell you, yes. And one who is more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'Behold, I send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' Truly I say to you, among those born of women, there is not arisen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet the one who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and violent men take it by force. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John, and if you are willing to accept it, John himself is Elijah who was to come. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. But to what shall I compare this generation? It's like children sitting in the marketplaces who call out to the other children and say, 'We played the flute for you and you did not dance. We sang a dirge and you did not mourn.' For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, 'Behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' Yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds." Then he began to denounce the cities in which most of his miracles were done because they did not repent. "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the miracles had occurred in Tyre and Sidon, which occurred in you, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. Nevertheless, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, will not be exalted to heaven, will you? You will descend to Hades, for if the miracles had occurred in Sodom, which occurred in you, it would have remained to this day. Nevertheless, I say to you that it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for you. At that time, Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and intelligent and have revealed them to infants. Yes, Father, for this way was well-pleasing in your sight. All things have been handed over to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, nor does anyone know the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son wills to reveal him. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples became hungry and began to pick the heads of grain and eat. But when the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, Look, your disciples do what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. But he said to them, Have you not read what David did when he became hungry, he and his companions? How he entered the house of God and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priests alone. Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and are innocent? But I say to you that something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, I desire compassion and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Departing from there, he went into their synagogues, and a man was there whose hand was withered, and they questioned Jesus, asking, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? So that they might accuse him. And he said to them, What man is there among you who has a sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will he not take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable then is a man than a sheep? So then it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And then he said to the man, Stretch out your hand. And the man stretched it out, and it was restored to normal like the other. But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him as to how they might destroy him. But Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there. Many followed him, and he healed them all. And he warned them not to tell who he was. This was to fulfill what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet. Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel, nor will he cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A battered reed he will not break off, and a smoldering wick he will not put out, until he leads justice to victory. And in his name the Gentiles will hope. Can we? Oh, no, I've got the right slide up there. Okay, verse 22. Then a demon-possessed man who was blind and mute was brought to Jesus, and Jesus healed him so that the mute man spoke and saw. All the crowds were amazed and were saying, This man cannot be the son of David, can he? But when the Pharisees heard this, they said, this man casts out demons only by Beelzebul, the ruler of the demons. Knowing their thoughts, Jesus said to them, any kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and any city or house divided against itself will not stand. If Satan casts out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then will his kingdom stand? If I, by Beelzebul, cast out demons, by whom do your sons cast them out? For this reason, they will be your judges. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God has come upon you. Or how can anyone enter into the strong man's house and carry off his property unless he first binds the strong man? And then he will plunder his house. He who is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters. Therefore I say to you, any sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven people, but blasphemy against the Spirit shall not be forgiven. Whoever speaks a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him. But whoever speaks against the Holy Spirit, it shall not be forgiven him, either in this age or in the age to come. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Then some of the scribes and the Pharisees said to him, Teacher, we want to see a sign from you. But he answered and said to them, An evil and adulterous generation craves for a sign, and yet no sign will be given to it but the sign of Jonah the prophet. For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the sea monster, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will stand up with this generation at the judgment and will condemn it because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And behold, something greater than Jonah is here. The queen of the south will rise up with this generation at the judgment and will condemn it because she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, something greater than Solomon is here. Now when the unclean spirit goes out of a man, it passes through waterless places, seeking rest, and it does not find it. Then it says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when it comes, it finds it unoccupied and swept and put in order. Then it goes and takes along with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and they live there. And the last state of the man becomes worse than the first. That is the way it will also be with this evil generation. While he was still speaking to the crowds, behold, his mother and his brothers were standing outside seeking to speak to him. And someone said to him, Behold, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak to you. But Jesus answered the one who was telling him and said, Who is my mother? And who are my brothers? And stretching out his hand toward his disciples, he said, Behold, my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father who is in heaven, he is my brother and sister and mother. when John's disciples came, "Are you the one?" He said, "Go back and tell them what you see." Those cities who would refuse to believe do not recognize that the cities that have been judged were for unbelief, but if those cities had heard and seen what you have heard and seen, they would have believed and would still be here today. Are you weary of trying to earn your salvation and continue in your righteousness? Come to me, learn of me. I will give you rest. Are you weary and feel that there is just no rest for you and things happen that we see God working on the Sabbath? He gets to work because he's the Lord of the Sabbath. And to his disciples, reaffirming who he is as the Lord of glory, the King, and his wrath against the Jewish leaders who would refuse to believe. And then the last one that is so fun. Jesus, your mother and brothers are outside. Who is it that are my mother and my brothers? It is those who believe. And the wonderful application of that is that if we are those who believe, we are mother and brothers of Jesus. Father, as we have looked into this passage and read through these chapters, we see Jesus asserting his authority as King, declaring his message, declaring that the gospel is to go out and those who refuse it will suffer condemnation. And as I read in John the other day, just it's not that they have refused to believe that message, that they have only refused to believe that message, but it's because they've already been condemned because they have been refusing to believe the message. And yet, as John reminded us, you sent Jesus into the world to save the world. And if we would put our trust in him, we would be saved and not condemned. Lord, help us to take that message to those around us. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.